Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, soon to be Liberty State, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. It's about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. And it's about Ephesians 2, 5 through 6. God made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places. In Christ Jesus, amen and amen. Last few shows I've been talking about the counter state. I've been talking about Maoist insurgency doctrine and how they're following that to a T. To refresh your memory, Maoist insurgency doctrine essentially breaks down into five stages, five parts. You have the mass line, or the communication that comes down to everybody from the top, so everybody has the same messaging. And you have the united front, so the public appearances, everything, they appear united. The red-green axis, the Marxists and the Islamists will go on camera, will go to events, they'll be together and look like a united front. The third thing is political warfare. That is the warfare of smearing, discrediting, humiliating. Now, remember, this is Maoist insurgency doctrine. This happened back in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. So this is not new, what the mainstream media is doing today. Everybody, you know, that they really think is a threat to their for-profit companies, that they think is a threat to their agenda, then becomes X, becomes a racist, becomes some horrible person, becomes some extremist, right? Even though they are. I mean, this is projection, and we've talked about that in previous shows. Okay, so the fourth thing is something called military or violent action. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, after a raid of Ismail Abrassi's secret sub-basement, in that secret sub-basement, they found what has come to be known as explanatory memorandum, among many other documents that were introduced into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial. In those documents, they admit two very key things. First of all, that their goal is to establish a worldwide caliphate under Sharia law. That means everybody, under Sharia law, through a civilization jihadist process. And that they want to sabotage our miserable house by our own hands, okay? Just talking about the United States. They also admit that they create something called a special section. That, folks, is the military, the violent arm in the United States of America. Likewise, the Marxists are beginning to be overt that these arms exist. The Red Army, you can go look these up online. The creation of the Red Army, that's actually what they're calling it. The creation of these clear pockets of Antifa who are bent on violent action. In fact, one of their posts in downtown Seattle said, "You just take power." That was the message on there, okay? In other words, you don't just vote in power, you just take it. Okay. You also have the creation of the Socialist Rifle Association and Redneck Revolt to train. And folks that we know have very clearly demonstrated that training exercises are going on among the Marxists in America. Just like with the Muslim Brotherhood, which has had training camps in the United States for a couple of decades now. Again, proven. Some people say it even goes back to 40 years. But again, proven. And in documents, it talks about the need for physical fitness. It talks about the need for shooting proficiency. So it's very clear what's happening. And then the fifth leg is international action. And these are the organizations internationally that are arms of either the Marxists or the Muslim Brotherhood that they're using to leverage international policy and then try to impose that on the United States of America. So all of that, I want to shift now to our identity as Christians, okay? How many of you have ever heard of the Battle of Tours? How many of you have ever heard of the Battle of Vienna? How many of you have ever heard of the Battle of Lepanto? And I want you to just think about it here for a second. Some of one of these, at least, you probably have heard on this show. But understand that at the death of Muhammad in 632, it took 100 years, so 732, the Battle of Tours in France, where they were literally trying to crush Europe, okay? Only 100 years. It's pretty fascinating, actually. But they lost to Charles Martel, who drove them back out, and eventually, while they were in Spain, eventually drove those Islamic armies out of Europe. Okay. In 1571 was the Battle of Lepanto. It was actually happened on October 7th, so it's one of the reasons I'm bringing it up, where a fleet of the Holy League, which was led by the Venetian Republic and the Spanish Empire, fought the Ottoman Empire in a naval engagement in the Gulf of Patras, and after praying the rosary, get in this battle and win when they're not supposed to, and essentially destroy, for that time, the Ottoman Empire's navy, okay? So this is in the south of Europe, okay? So you had one in the west of Europe in Tours, France. And you have this in the south of Europe, the Battle of Lepanto. It's a naval engagement. Then you have in the eastern part of Europe, in 1683, the Battle of Vienna. The great Polish king, Jan Sobieski, led a coalition which consisted of peoples from modern-day Hungary, from the Czech, modern-day Czech Republic, from, obviously, Poland, northern Italy, and modern-day Austria. And you can go look this up on the different flags that were there. And these people groups came together and stopped again an invasion of the Ottoman Empire into Eastern Europe, okay? The extant writings of that time, the extant writings at the Battle of Lepanto, the Battle of Vienna, and interestingly enough, our founding fathers, when they had to fight the Battle of Tripoli, where the Marine Corps gets part of its song, and when asked, why are you attacking us unprovoked? The response of the ambassador from those North African Muslim nations was, our prophet commands us to do so. And then Thomas Jefferson knew, we have to fight. But in all of those cases in the extant writings, it was very clear that our mission, our job, okay, as peoples from these different areas, as Christians, was to defend Christendom. I submit to you that in a lot of respects, whether we're talking about these counterstates or the globalists, we are defending Christendom. All of these systems have one thing in common. All of these movements have one thing in common. All of these invasions have one thing in common. All of the attacks that we're talking about have one thing in common, historically. All of these things. And that is to destroy and eliminate Jesus Christ from the scene. Whether we're talking in schools or we're talking as part of these invasions to come in and replace it with Sharia law, or we're talking about the Marxists who just want God completely out of the picture, as was the case evidenced not only in the Soviet Union, but in China, in Cambodia, etc. And Christians, particularly Christians and Jews of these areas, were the hardest hit and persecuted. It's important then that we understand what our identity is, and that we might be facing these same threats today should evoke in us the want, the desire, the energy to continue our Judeo-Christian culture and heritage to our posterity. I think it's very important to understand this. Historically, this is very accurate. And you can go look it up yourselves. Battle of Tours, Battle of Lepanto, Battle of Vienna, Battle of Tripoli. It's really, nothing has changed. It's the same forces that have this common purpose of trying to eliminate Jesus Christ. Now, we as Christians know that that's not going to happen. But it is important to understand what these other systems, these other movements, these other counterstates believe. And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, Venezuela, once again, 1,000,000% inflation, 40% of businesses closed. Their solution is to remove zeros. And everybody still says, hey, they're not doing their socialism right. We need to change that. Yeah. All right, let's move to a couple of things that are really interesting. Number one, coming to us from the New American magazine, the Chinese had an intelligence officer that's been charged now with economic espionage. Economic espionage. Understand, they're not just going for military seat. This is economic espionage. And he was arrested and charged with conspiring and attempting to commit economic espionage and steal trade secrets from multiple U.S. aviation and aerospace companies. So understand what they're going after now. And he was extradited to the United States on October 9th. It's part of the Jiangsu State Security Department. And look, this isn't where it stops. I'm going to go to the next story, which is just absolutely fascinating to me. And that is the big hack, how China used a tiny chip to infiltrate U.S. companies. This is coming to us from Bloomberg. In 2015, Amazon actually started evaluating a startup company called Elemental Technologies. Their servers were put together by Super Microcomputer Incorporated, which is a San Jose-based company. So Super Micro, okay? And it's one of the world's largest suppliers of server motherboards. All right. Now, they were sent to a third party to test. And what they found nested on the server's motherboards was a tiny microchip, not bigger than a grain of rice, that wasn't part of the board's original design. What it was a hardware hack. A hardware hack by China, according to this article. Now, interestingly enough, Apple stopped using them, but didn't say that that was the reason why. But you got to understand, these servers, Elemental's servers, could be found in Department of Defense data centers, CIA's drone operations, and the onboard networks of Navy ships. And that Elemental was just one of hundreds of Supermicro customers. So this was a hack, a hardware hack And if you put that together with this economic espionage, and specifically of aviation and aerospace, you see where they're attacking. They're attacking America's tech sector. It's important to understand that. Put them together. All right. Moving now to the Middle East. First of all, there's some breaking news coming to us from Deb Kafile that there's some unusual military activity centering on the Gaza Strip. Now, this is after they found the 15th tunnel, and it looks as well like this operation may trigger a fresh Palestinian missile barrage. But there continues to be violence on this border, especially by these incendiary balloons that they keep sending over southern Israel. So we're going to keep our eyes on that. Also, it looks like the Trump administration may be in the final stages of negotiating the release of the pastor that was taken prisoner in Turkey. So we'll keep our eyes on that as well. That's coming to us from WorldNet Daily. So moving next to what I think is a pretty important understanding of the National Front is the EMP Carrington threat. Now, a Carrington-level event happened in 1859, was a solar flare that quite literally fried telegraph lines. People are concerned, again, that if that same event happened today, it would be catastrophic because we're so dependent on electronics. I had somebody message me that, you know, that this was some sort of loosey-goosey, not real threat. Look, folks, I want to be very clear on this. Former Soviet Union threat doctrine called for the use of EMPs. They tested them over Kazakhstan in the 1960s. It was called Project K. You can go look it up yourself. Interestingly enough, the Soviets later, and this is a interesting thing, had a doctrine of not putting electronics in some of their equipment following their threat doctrine. After the fall of the Soviet Union, you had a company called Club K, or this, at least, it's not a device, this container-launched missile system called Club K. Why are those Club K, Project K? Put it together a little bit, for goodness sakes. They don't do that stuff by accident. In addition to that, North Korea, China, all have talked about threat doctrines that include an EMP. So to say this is some kind of, you know, far out thing, it's just not true. And oh, by the way, it's so cheap to harden the grid. Some people say as cheap as $2 billion, some as expensive as $8. But compared to what we're spending on defense now, to harden our grid, why not do it? If not from a natural disaster, from a man-made one. Especially where there is clear, unambiguous threat doctrine that says that this could be used in a war. All right, next on the National Front, Trump abruptly ends law enforcement program at wildlife refuges. That's a step forward. A lot of people complaining about the treatment at some of these wildlife refuges, and Trump starting to change some things. I love it. Also on the National Front, the deep state. Going to talk about a couple things here. First of all, former Attorney General Eric Holder coming out, and I think this is saying, when they go low, we go high. No, when they go low, we kick them. So looks like some code for a promotion of violence from Eric Holder. This coming to us from Red State. And then he says, well, I obviously didn't intend to promote violence. But the fact is, every time these guys say this kind of stuff, Maxine Waters, there is violence. And it's very clear that these are there's coordination. So, my goodness, Let's be real about that. All right, Google censorship. Now, this coming to us from WorldNet Daily as well. News of a leaked internal Google report indicates that tech companies intend to censor web content as editors and publishers in response to a political resurgence from the right. You heard what I just said. According to this internal Google report, they intend to censor web content from the right. Quote, the 85-page document acknowledges that Google and other tech platforms now control the majority of online conversations and have undertaken a shift towards censorship in response to unwelcome political events around the world. In other words, if you don't agree with them politically, they're going to censor you. And here it is in black and white. That's why if you haven't already joined alternative social media, you need to do it now. Real.video is a great one. It's an alternative to Google or to Google and YouTube. Also, Liberty Rush, Local Activist, MeWe, Gab AI. There's a bunch of them. Join them all because you don't know which one's going to get taken out next. And interestingly enough, along this line, right before the elections, Facebook has taken Sherry Duvalis. She's one of the reporters at Readout News, has taken her personal Facebook page down. I don't find that as a coincidence. And folks, if you don't think it's going to ever happen to you, it's already starting to happen to people around us here locally. All right, on the national front as well. CARE must stand trial for fraud. It's about time. It is about time. On the regional front, ranchers up in Northeast Washington having a real significant problem. Wolves, particularly the new Profanity Peak pack, huge depredations of cattle that are happening up there right now. The director of Fish and Wildlife is considering lethal removal up there, and it's about time that it happens. These are not wolves that are native. Jim Beers was on the show before, conclusively laid that out. So Diamond M Ranch, particularly, among others, have suffered loss. And I mean, look, this seems like a pretty simple deal to me. You already had one gal chased up a tree up there, okay? And this whole ridiculous nonsense that wolves won't attack humans, it goes against all of the historical documentation to the contrary, goes against not just historical documentation here in the United States, but also in Russia. It's ridiculous. They are beginning to get so big as far as numbers that they are now encroaching into human areas as well. All right. Also, on the local front, Death of a Nation. Make sure, if you haven't seen that new movie by Dinesh D'Souza, go see it. Excellent. Really looking forward to it. I've seen it once. I think I'm going to see it again. It was so well done. But go see Death of a Nation by Dinesh D'Souza. Also on the local front, Alex Newman is going to be our guest today on the radio, is going to be here tonight at Center Place in Spokane Valley with a presentation on the war on America. Who's behind it? What are they doing? And then what the best part of it is, what are the solutions? I think that's pretty critical. What are the solutions? Next Monday, so that's Monday, I believe, the 15th, I'm going to be giving a presentation to the conservative Republicans, and we're going to be doing that here in Spokane Valley as well. You should get there usually, I don't know, sometime around 6 o'clock. But it's very, very important if you want to get an update on what's happening, kind of what the real threats are that we face, not the trumped up threats and the garbage that comes out of people that subscribe to socialism. But if you want to see it, it's going to be at Darcy's. And get there about, six thirty if you want to eat beforehand. Again, the Constitutional Conservative Republicans are going to be having that. And the Conservative Republicans are a great group if you don't know them. So look forward to seeing everybody there. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. And make sure you go to VoteShea.com. Help keep us on the air. And if you miss a show, we're repeated at 9 o'clock on ACN. But also, you can go to iTunes or Podbean, B-E-A-N, and you can download the show there. I'm also up on Reel.video and YouTube, but it's a little bit longer delay to get them up on those platforms. The other two are pretty quick. Well, my guest today, again, is Alex Newman, foreign correspondent for The New American, just an all-around great patriot. Alex, thanks for joining me on the radio today. How are you doing?
I'm great, Matt. Thank you so much for having me.
So, give the listeners a little bit of an idea. What are you going to be talking about tonight with the war on America?
So, you know, there's all these different agendas and issues, and we see global warming. Oh, we need to deal with global warming. And we see, the refugee crisis. We need to deal with that. And the trade crisis. We need to deal with that. And we have, the education system and all these things that seem unrelated. And in fact, they are all very related. They're all part of the same agenda. And so what I hope to do with my talk tonight is show you how the global warming hoax, as our president calls it, the refugee crisis, these pseudo-free trade deals that really build up international institutions, globalist bureaucracies, and the education system, how these are all working together. And, you know, depending on how much time we have, I might get into some other issues as well, and just show how these are all leading us toward the same destination, which is what these globalists themselves refer to as a new world order.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this, the establishment of these kind of, they're not kind of, these counter states. First of all, a lot of people say, well, this is kind of conspiracy theory that really doesn't exist. Explain to the listeners a little bit about who these counter states are, what they're doing, who's behind them, not just in the United States, but globally as well.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the term deep state has really become very popular recently, probably because President Trump has been using it. He talks about a criminal deep state that's out to get him, and there very much is a criminal deep state out to get him. We've talked about a great patriot who served as director of policy and planning in the National Security Council in the Trump administration until he was sacked by a deep state operative, a globalist called H.R. McMaster, member of the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, one of the premier globalist think tanks, so-called. And it's multifaceted, and they use a lot of people as useful idiots in their war on America. And in fact, it's broader than that. It's really a war on humanity and ultimately a war on God. I call it war on America because I really focus on the American component of it. But when you boil it all down, when you chase down all the leads, you keep coming back to the same people. So we have, what I call the deep state behind the deep state. We did a special issue about this in The New American, and I've been talking about it now for a while, you know, traveling around the country giving talks on this. But you have, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations, I think, is one of the key groups. You know, so many people on the left and on the right don't even realize that their leaders are all in the same little club together, right? It's called the Council on Foreign Relations. And you have Hillary Clinton telling you, you can see the video on YouTube, that's who tells her what she should be doing and how she should think about the future. And then you have Dick Cheney telling us that he's been a member and a director for a long time, but he never tells the folks back in Wyoming when he's running for re-election. So, you know, that's one of the premier organizations. We have, of course, the Bilderberg. I've been to two of their meetings, obviously not as an invited guest. You have the Trilateral Commission, founded by David Rockefeller and Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, also an entity promoting basically global government, global technocratic government. And, they have a lot of front groups. They make very expert use of a whole bunch of movements, including socialists, Marxists, Islamists, various movements that are operating in the United States and around the world. And when you really boil it all down, they're all moving us toward the same agenda, even if a lot of the useful idiots on the ground don't realize it.
Well, I think that that's kind of the important part of this, that a lot of people don't realize that they're being used as part of or as a tool of this great machine. And a lot of folks have said, well, okay, well, what really is the motive behind all of this? And you kind of alluded to what the goals are. What is the motive behind all of this? And why would they want to take down America?
Yeah, you know, I think if you really want to get to the very heart of the issue, I think you have to consult the Bible. I think you have to go to God's Word. And what does God's Word tell us? Well, you know, it tells us where this is all going. If you read Ephesians 6:12, it tells us that we're dealing not with flesh and blood, but with powers and principalities and spiritual wickedness and darkness in high places. And so ultimately, I think that is the heart of the agenda. Now, a lot of the people involved with it certainly don't realize that. You know, Lenin used to call these types of people useful idiots who don't really understand the goals that they're helping to bring about. And there are plenty of genuine people who genuinely believe that globalism is superior, that taking down America and building a global governance system would be better than what we have now, because they see all these wars that, of course, the globalists and the deep states causes. And they say, well, you know, wouldn't it be better if we just had one single global government? So there are plenty of useful idiots who believe this. But at the top level, I think, you know, you have people who want more money and more power, even though they already have an unbelievable amount of money and power. And then ultimately, you just have evil, right? When you boil it all down, you're just dealing with evil. And I think the Bible speaks a great deal on this topic. And I think if we see this just as a political battle or just as a cultural battle, we're missing the big picture, which is that this is really also a spiritual battle. And that is, you know, I think one of the most important takeaways from all this is we're not just dealing with people who disagree with us politically, right? We're dealing with actual evil and with an actually evil agenda that intends to subjugate us if we let it.
A lot of people, you know, kind of personify that evil with George Soros, you know, Dr. Evil, he's the guy. But there's a lot more to it than that. It's not just George Soros, because, you know, you asked a very provocative question that, well, how did George Soros get to where he is? So if you could explain that a little bit to the listeners.
Sure. Well, thank you, Matt. I think this is such an important question because, you know, we're allowed to hate on George Soros, right? You can even hear people on Fox News and even on sometimes on CNN talking about George Soros and he's funding this and he's funding that. So this is not really exactly some secretive operation, right? Everybody knows he just sunk $18 billion more dollars and he's funding Occupy Wall Street and Catholics for Abortion or Catholics for Choice, they call it, and subversion of churches and riots and you know, Black Lives Matter, to hate on the police and ultimately nationalize the police. So all these different things. But of course, Soros is not the top of the pyramid. In fact, Soros got his start, and a good friend of mine, constitutional attorney Joe Wolverton, who also writes for The New American, a great educator, writer of books, and educating the next generation of patriot leaders in America, he did a really good article in The New American where he shows that Soros got his start with Rothschild money. And to an average American, Rothschild, what does that even mean? And this is an incredibly powerful family. They've been around for centuries, and they're still very active today, right? I just came across a Baron D. Rothschild signature the other day when I was exposing Irina Bokova, the Communist Party operative who was running UNESCO, and they were promoting her to become the Secretary General of the UN. So you still have, you know, more layers of this pyramid, if you will, and the Rothschilds helped finance Soros to become who he is today, and he used insider trading. You know, these globalists and these insiders and deep staters, they have networks. In fact, Soros has been convicted of insider trading, so there's no speculation there. But, you know, that's the important thing for people to realize. Soros is not the top of the pyramid, right? Soros is flesh and blood, and it goes much deeper than that.
I know, and I think that's critical. There are so many different aspects to this that you can talk about some of them, but some of them you can't. That's where you start really running into a lot of pushback in the media. You start kind of touching on some of these things. What are some organizations, particularly with the United Nations, some organizations maybe that we don't know about in the United States, and maybe some other people that we need to be aware of, particularly kind of these hidden like you said, deep states behind the deep state. If you could explain a little bit about that hierarchy to the listeners.
Sure. Awesome. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the opportunity. And since we're so limited on time, I encourage people who want to learn more about this deep state, you know, what is it and how do we expose it and who's involved, pick up a copy of the special issue we did at The New American. It's called Deep State Pulling Strings from Behind the Scenes. And, you know, there's a huge constellation of these organizations. Some of them are semi-secret, right? We talked about the Council on Foreign Relations, which is an open organization. It has a website and it posts its members' names online, but you really don't see them identified in the media. You know, when they talk about Hillary Clinton and Dick Cheney, they don't mention that they're all part of the same club, right? Officially, at least, they're opponents. And internationally, you have a lot of these, right? If you go to Carol Quigley, he was Bill Clinton's mentor, a history professor. He was very much on board with this agenda. And he had an opportunity to examine their papers, he said, for 2 years. And he said, you know, I agree with their goals. Basically, global, he described it as a neo-feudalist world government where the central banks would basically dominate the world. And those are his exact words from his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And he talks about what he calls the international roundtable groups, kind of funded with money from Cecil Rhodes, the great British industrialist. Rhodesia was actually named after him, this great British industrialist. And in his will, he left several wills, and he set up a whole bunch of organizations. In the United States, he set up the Council on Foreign Relations. In Britain, he set up what's called the Royal Institute for International Affairs, or Chatham House. It's the sister organization of the CFR here. And all over the world, you have these, right? You have the European Council on Foreign Relations and all these different front groups that most people have no idea even exist, much less that they're all tied together behind the scenes. And, you know, those are some of the kind of semi-secret ones. Again, Trilateral Commission and Bilderberg are huge. Then you have, you know, secret societies. We talked a little earlier about Skull and Bones, right? George W. Bush and John Kerry were both members. William F. Buckley was a member. Lots of very, very prominent people who are on both sides of the debates, right? And the guy who wrote the defining book on this talked about how they want to control both sides of all the debates. They want a right side and the left side, and then using this dialectical process, they'll guide us toward their ultimate agenda, which you know, we talked a little bit about before. They describe it as a new world order. And, you know, Bohemian Grove, another organization that people never hear about, 2,500 of the most powerful men in the world. They get together once a year in the Redwood Forest of Northern California, engage in very bizarre rituals, right? President Nixon wrote a little bit about it in his autobiography. He said the speech that basically started him on the road to the presidency took place there. And, you know, in private, he had other things to say about it. But those are some of the organizations. And then, you know, there's more obvious ones that are fairly open. You just don't read about them in the media. You know, World Government Forum, or the World Government Summit, excuse me, I think is an important one to at least mention. You know, this is organized by the Islamic rulers of the United Arab Emirates, the sheikhs over there, and they bring in, you know, the head of the United Nations and the heads of all the key UN agencies and the heads of the IMF and all the big technology companies and all the rest of it, and they have some meetings. Last year, they set up a big replica of the Arch of Baal, and they held their meeting under this weird replica of the Arch of Baal, and they talk about how are we going to get the global government. So, you know, you also have less secretive ones that are also absolutely crucial to this agenda, Matt. You have the G77 plus China, for example, is one that you almost never hear about in America, but it's so important. It's actually 134 governments, an alliance of 134 governments. They control the overwhelming majority of seats in the UN General Assembly. And they've been pretty transparent about their agenda. You can read their declarations. They met in Bolivia a few years ago. The chief of the United Nations was down there. And the banner, the title of the summit was called A New World Order to Live Well. And you had basically every communist gangster and mass murderer and Islamist dictator you could think of at this meeting. And they agreed you should go read their declaration. They want a global totalitarian government to redistribute the wealth of America and Europe and Japan to them and basically put the world under the control of the UN. So it's not a secret society. It's out there in the open. It has a website, but people don't hear about it. And that's just, you know, one example among many, many more that I could give, Matt.
Yeah, and that there are so many that are out there. For people that want to learn more about this, the New American has been in front of a lot of these issues by decades. If you could give a couple examples of that, and if people want to know more, where can they go to research this stuff and find out about it for themselves and read it for themselves?
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate that. And it's true. You know, when I found The New American in college, I just was astounded that such a thing even existed. I was just so depressed. You know, how am I going to work in journalism? It's all propaganda and fake news and lies. I guess I'll just have to go into business or something. And then I found The New American, and I was just thrilled that it existed. And they really have been out front of these issues, you know, decades in advance in many cases. You know, I can think of a couple examples. We were hanging out today with a very good friend of mine, in my opinion, maybe America's top investigative journalist. In fact, I can't think of anybody who's done more important work and better work than he has in the field of journalism. And, you know, back in the 1980s, he was warning that the European globalists working with American globalists were going to create a European superstate to submerge all of the nations of Europe into a totalitarian regional government. And at the time, people laughed at that. They said, that's so silly. That's so ridiculous. You know, but it's a European community, right? It's just about trade and free trade. Don't be such a conspiracy theorist. Well, you know, now they're openly announcing that they want to become a European federal government. It is, in many ways, the EU is now more powerful than our own federal government. They can veto the budgets passed by the parliaments of nations, right? So the EU has usurped more power even than our own federal government has managed to usurp. And they don't even have elected leaders, right? These decisions are made by unelected bureaucrats at the European Commission. You know, they have a rubber stamp parliament that doesn't, it's not actually a parliament, right? It doesn't really make laws. And so Bill Jasper was ahead of this by 30 or 40 years, right? And of course, the establishment media will never go back and apologize to us for having ridiculed us and said we're conspiracy theorists now that we've been proven correct. South Africa is another issue that, you know, I could not believe. I lived in South Africa. I moved there when I was 18, and a wonderful, wonderful place with wonderful, wonderful people. But unfortunately, you know, they are on the front line of the war against freedom and the war against civilization and the war against nation states and Christianity. And Bill Jasper, back in the 1980s, was writing in The New American. I mean, you would swear when you read it today. When I read his articles, I thought, man, this guy must have had a crystal ball or something. How could he have possibly known this was going to happen? All of the media in the world was promoting the party line, right? That South Africa needed to be condemned and destroyed. The UN called it a crime against humanity. And Bill Jasper said, hey, wait a minute, guys. These guys are communists. These guys are revolutionaries. And their intention is to subjugate and destroy the society that exists now, or the really, I should say, the nations, right? South Africa is really a collection of very, very diverse nations. You have the Zulu kingdom and the Xhosa and the, you know, the Afrikaner people who descended from the Dutch and all that. So you have many, many nations in South Africa. And Bill Jasper predicted with perfect accuracy what was going to happen. Now, today, we know that Nelson Mandela was a member of the Communist Party. The ANC, his political party, admits it, and the Communist Party admits it. And yet, when Bill Jasper reported that, they said, oh, that's so outlandish, right? He says he's not a member of the Communist Party, so he must not be. And of course, we found out now he was a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party. Now, if that had been more widely known at the time, things would have turned out very differently. Now, you know, Trump has tried to step in here. He pointed out that the farmers down there are being slaughtered. He pointed out that their property is being expropriated. All you had to do was read The New American in the 1980s, and you would have known exactly what was coming. And there's so many examples like that, Matt, that, you know, those are international ones that come to mind because that's what I focus on so much. But the exact same thing has been true here.
There are not just people in the United States that are waking up to these issues and these connections, but also people in Europe as well. Can you describe your recent trip and talk a little bit about some of the awakening that's happening over there?
Sure. And, you know, I've called Europe home for a long time. I grew up in Latin America and then moved to Europe when I was about 15 or 16. And I began in Switzerland, which, you know, I would say is probably the most liberty-minded, decent-sized nation in the world, in many ways even more so than America, right? Their idea of gun control is as soon as your son turns 18, he must be delivered a machine gun by the government, and he needs to keep it in his closet with ammo and know how to use it and right, all the rest of it. And, of course, it works very well there. They have radical decentralization of power, right? Their federal parliament only meets 2 weeks out of the year. Nobody knows who the president is, right? They just ride the train just like everybody else. So that was, for me, incredible to see that kind of freedom. But the rest of Europe has been basically, freedom has eroded to such an extent that, you know, whether it could be resurrected remains to be seen. But very good things are happening now, right? I just flew in from Europe a few days ago, and in Poland. Poland is really an incredible bright spot there. Now, there's obviously some very, very serious concerns, but the Patriot movement in Poland, the revival of Christianity, they actually recently declared Jesus Christ to be the king. They recognized Jesus Christ as the king of their nation in a public ceremony with the prime minister and the entire government leadership. They said, Jesus Christ is the king of Poland, and that's that. So very good things are happening. Hungary is another place that's a bright spot. You have the prime minister there, and I just had a recent meeting with the Secretary of State for Public Diplomacy, and they are on fire there, right? They just passed the Stop Soros Act. And to quote the prime minister, his exact words, there is a treasonous conspiracy of what he calls internationalist fanatics operating out of Brussels. They are trying to centralize all power. They are trying to destroy nation states. And they are trying to bring about the end of Western Christian civilization. And they're doing it using the weapon of mass migration, right? So you have the globalists go blow up a bunch of countries, Libya, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Ivory Coast, etc. And then they welcome in millions of Islamic migrants into Europe, and then they pose as humanitarians for doing it. Viktor Orban, the prime minister of Hungary, has said, absolutely, we're not going to let you get away with that. Forget it. That's a lie. You guys are trying to smash nation states and build your little regional order. And the people have rallied to him. They just had an election, and they got more than two-thirds of the vote just for their party. So they dominate the parliament there, even though they've been ruthlessly and relentlessly demonized by Soros, by the media, by the EU. So good things are happening there, Matt.
Let's talk a little bit about Donald Trump. We kind of talked about it at the very beginning of the interview, and that is Rich Higgins and his memorandum that got him fired from the White House. Donald Trump has been briefed on a lot of this. If you can, talk a little bit about what you know in that vein and why it's so important, if nobody's ever even heard of this memorandum from Rich Higgins, why it's so important for people to read.
Yeah, I think this memorandum is a very succinct description of the problem that we're facing. And, I encourage everybody to go out and get a copy. Some of the media kind of ridiculed him. So if you put it into a search engine, you'll have to sort through a bunch of propaganda from the left-wing propaganda media. But go get your hands on the actual memo and read it yourself. And he talks about the deep state and the unelected cabal, God bestriding the earth, right? is how he refers to it, quoting somebody. And he talks about how the globalists and the Islamists and the socialists and the mass media have joined forces and declared war, not just on the president, not just on those who support the president, but on even the concept of America, right? On the nation of America, of course. Speaking of my talk, War on America, they've declared war on America, but also on the idea of America, this idea that, God has endowed us with inalienable rights, and we need to protect those rights in the Constitution. That is really the idea that underpins America. I mean, that is essentially what America is at its core, is a nation that recognizes, God said, don't steal. That means you have a right to your property. God said, don't kill people. That means you have a right to your life. And when we recognize that and codify it in law, we have America. And unfortunately, this deep state cabal that is very eloquently articulated and exposed in this memorandum is waging absolute total war on that. In fact, Higgins goes on to describe what they're doing as a kind of Maoist style insurgency. And he's absolutely right. That is what we're facing. And if we don't realize that, it is a very real prospect that the other side could win and you can kiss your freedoms and your republic goodbye.
So if you're going to be talking to some of the young folks out there that are listening, describe a little bit about how you woke up and then why it's so important for young people to get educated and involved.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. And, I had been so thoroughly brainwashed with the globalism. I've been out of the country almost my whole life. I went to international school, very good schools. They gave me a good education and taught me to read, which is a lot more than you can say for some of the poor victims of America's public education system. But they also just saturated us in UN propaganda, right? I mean, they were basically training future globalists to run the machinery of globalism. And then I came across on YouTube, this was in the early days of YouTube. I was in college. That must have been, 10, 11 years ago at this point. I'm getting old. And it was about Katanga, this little province in the Congo that I had never heard of. A communist dictator had taken over there, and the people of Katanga decided, hey, we actually don't want to live under a communist dictator. Thank you very much. We're going to declare independence and we'll do our thing over there. You guys try your slavery thing and, you know, that'll work out fine. Well, the UN didn't like that. And so they sent in the troops. They call them the peace troops. You know, talk about Orwellian doublespeak, right? The war troops are, of course, the peace troops. So they sent in the peace troops. And this documentary exposes concretely, right? It's beyond any shadow of a doubt. The record is perfectly clear. The evidence is overwhelming. They slaughtered civilians. They raped women. They bayoneted children. They bombed hospitals. And, you know, this flew in the face of everything I had ever learned about the UN. So at the end of this video, it said, this video was produced by the John Birch Society. Call 1-800, you know, JBS, whatever it is, and we'll send you an information packet. I had never heard of the John Birch Society. So I said, okay, you know, I'll call that number. And I ordered a packet and they sent it. And right away, you know, I got the packet. It was great. I signed up, you know, liberty, freedom. And I had already started kind of coming around to that view. I was a recovering atheist Marxist, if you will. And I had kind of woken up to the evils of big government some years earlier. But I didn't really understand what was going on until I saw this video and started getting information from JBS. And over time, I got to know our local chapter leader there, fantastic local business owner who was giving me books. You know, Shadows of Power was one of the, you know, defining ones that I read. And we talked earlier about Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, showing how the entire communist movement had been funded by these deep state insiders here in the United States, Wall Street mega bankers. And, you know, that just set me off on the journey. I was trying to read everything I could. And, you know, the Birch Society and the New American played a huge role in bringing that about. So I encourage people, you know, get books, get videos, and right now we still have the internet. Make use of it because, you know, this stuff is crucial. It sounds so abstract and far removed from our everyday concerns. You know, I got homework to do. I've got kids to feed, whatever it is that you're dealing with. But, you know, these things matter. And if we don't pay attention, if we don't get involved, the consequences are going to be absolutely horrific. And, you know, it's not just the terror that needs to motivate us. It's the thought that we can build something better, right? We can have a free society. We can live as free, dignified human beings, and we can ranch, and we can have businesses, and we can govern ourselves, and we can raise our kids. You know, that needs to motivate us too. So I would say, you know, young people, get educated and get involved, and older people too. You know, we need everybody on board here. We need all hands on deck, and we need them now. So come on, guys, get involved.
So one of the things I really appreciate about the New American is the vetting that goes through each, you know, article and subject for that matter. If you could, there are a lot of whisper campaigns out there against the New American and its parent organization. There are a lot of people out there who say, oh, this stuff is fake. Describe the vetting process for the information that you guys put into the New American and online, and also debunk some of the whisper campaigns.
Yeah, well, you know, back in the 60s, when the establishment first realized, you know, there had never been anything, as far as we know, in all of history, like the John Birch Society. This was an organization that was created to last for hundreds of years for the purpose of holding back, you know, what we now call the deep state, you know, that 75% of Americans are concerned about, holding back the forces of the deep state, the forces of darkness, and protecting liberty, right? Less government, more responsibility, and with God's help, a better world. When the other side realized this and saw the incredible effectiveness of this, right, the JBS became incredibly influential right off the bat, right? It surged to 100,000 members, bringing in, you know, governors and senators, and they said, oh my goodness. And so a Communist Party publication, the Daily Worker, started this smear campaign with an article called open parentheses, from stage right, end parentheses, the John Birch Society. And they put out all these nasty smears that the Birch Society was fascist and that it was racist and that it was this and that and the other. And of course, none of that is true, right? We've heard them say the same thing about our president. In fact, the John Birch Society is the opposite of racist, and it's the opposite of fascist. First of all, fascism is, by definition, requires big government. One of the society's chief goals is to reduce the size and scope of the government so we can be free again. And, you know, the racist charge, they've been throwing that around for a long time. And again, it's absolutely discredited by the evidence. First of all, the society promotes what's known as individualism, right? We don't judge people based on collective characteristics or the melanin content of their skin. It's, you know, you're an individual, you're a person, you're created in the image of God. And that's always been the philosophy of the society. And so from the very beginning, There have been prominent black members and leaders and Jewish members and leaders. And it's still to this day, this continues. And yet the lies continue. And the reason is because they knew that the society posed an existential threat to their agenda. It's the same reason why they smeared Donald Trump, and it's the same reason why they smeared the Tea Party. And I know we're probably running out of time here, but just to speak briefly on what goes into the New American and the vetting. You know, when I send in an article, it doesn't go online until it's verified by at least two editors, right? Those are the ones that go online. The print publication, the vetting process is even more rigorous. We have an incredible research department. If you've ever been to Appleton, Wisconsin, you know, right? We have incredible facilities there with massive amounts of records and documents and publications. So massive amounts of research goes into this. We never publish anything unless we're sure we can vouch for the accuracy of it. You know, it's happened a couple times in our history that we've had to run corrections, but those are very rare, fortunately. And we do run corrections, right? Everybody's wrong. We're all, from time to time, we're all human. And so when there's an error, we run corrections, which I think adds to the credibility. But, you know, I encourage anybody who wants to know, pick up a copy of The New American, read it through, fact check every single thing as you go through it, and point out one thing that's inaccurate. You won't find any, as far as I know. And we work very, very hard to make sure we have only accurate information. And we have to, right? Because the other side would seize any opportunity to try to discredit us, and they do.
They do. No question about it. Once again, if you could plug the website, and also you have the print version of the magazine, but there's also a lot of online stuff you guys put out every day.
Yes. So the website is thenewamerican.com. I encourage you to go there, sign up for our daily headlines, and subscribe to the print magazine if you don't yet subscribe. You know, especially in this age of internet censorship and big tech coming down on everybody, you want to make sure that you have the print publication in your hand. But also, you know, get the daily headlines. That's free. It'll come to your inbox every day. You'll get the real news, none of the fluff about what the Kardashians did or which Hollywood celebrity got drunk and did that. You know, just what you need to know to keep your freedom, to keep our civilization running, and to keep the deep state on the retreat.
Alex Newman, foreign correspondent for the New American Magazine, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio. Look forward to seeing your presentation tonight.
Thanks so much, Matt.
All right. And if you don't know about the TNA, you can go find it online pretty simply, The New American. And also, again, if you have the opportunity tonight, you're going to want to be there at 6 o'clock, Center Place, Spokane Valley. We're going to be talking more about this. Look forward to seeing all of you there. This is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation an educated, greatest one.